The music teacher says it was consensual sex. His former students say it was rape.
He had sex with me once in the classroom, in a closet.
Something happened to me too.
I thought he was our little predator.
Why wasn't he stopped? These women seek answers and justice. I'm Julie Ireton, host of a new podcast, The Banned Teacher. It's available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Just that somebody could be this diabolical.
This is a CBC podcast.
There are classics in your toaster, in the blender and the clock, in the lamp and in the roaster, on the door and in the lock, in the washer and the dryer, and the garden tools you lend, in your music amplifier and electric fryer, you have got a plastic friend.
Plastic friend. Plastics are everywhere, and 60 years ago, that seemed like a good thing. The DuPont Company's pavilion at the 1964 World's Fair in New York included a full-on musical review billed as The Wonderful World of Chemistry. Wow, that sounds like a crowd pleaser, doesn't it? Well, today we know plastics aren't just in your toaster and electric fryer. They are just about everywhere, from the bottom of the ocean to the farthest reaches of the Arctic, and even in human blood and breast milk. That's why this week in Ottawa, delegates from around the world have gathered to negotiate a global treaty on plastic pollution. Among those attending is Jody Roussel. She is the Global Public Affairs Lead for Packaging and Sustainability at Nestle and co-chair of the Business Coalition for a Global Plastics Treaty. Jody, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Mark.
There was a report in the journal Science Advances this week that showed 56 companies are responsible for half the world's branded plastic waste, and your company, Nestle, is number three. So tell me, Jody, how much responsibility does Nestle take for contributing to this problem?
Now, we think the issue of plastic pollution globally is a very serious one. That's why we helped get this business coalition for the Global Plastics Treaty going. And that's why we've been here at all of the negotiations, showing that businesses care about addressing this issue. We're part of a group of over 200 businesses, investors, supporting NGOs in our coalition. And many of us have been working for years on voluntary measures to reduce plastic leakage into the environment, as well as taking voluntary commitments to overall reduce our plastics footprint and to redesign our packaging. We don't only use plastic. We also, in my company, we use glass, we use metal, we use paper. There are a variety of materials that we use, and the challenge is that each one of them needs to have an appropriate management at end of life, and that's why we're focused on building a circular economy. So this treaty, it's really a once-in-a-generation opportunity to get regulation in place that's going to help us manage the entire life cycle of plastics responsibly.
Okay, explain to me this, Jody, though. Why do companies like yours, like Nestle, why do you need a treaty to eliminate plastic pollution? Why can't you just, your company just act on its own?
So we have been acting on our own. That's actually the reason that we're here with the coalition, because we realize no one company can fix an entire system. We need global rules, because global rules are going to level the playing field. They'll put in place harmonized legislation between countries. They'll simplify compliance. They'll create global standards. They'll drive economies of scale and create markets for recycled content. Today, if I give you the context, about 500 companies do voluntary reporting on their plastics footprint with the Ellen MacArthur Foundation. And just last year, 7,000 started reporting with the Carbon Disclosure Project. But how many millions of companies are there in the world who haven't yet engaged with this problem to take action? We recognize the scale of the challenge, and that's why we're here with the Business Coalition asking for harmonized regulation, because we need that regulation to spark innovation, to scale solutions, and also to mobilize investment, particularly to develop infrastructure to manage not just plastic waste, but all types of post-consumer waste around the world.
Okay, so you're saying that your company, among others, because the top three, there's Nestle, there's Pepsi, there's Coca-Cola, and producing branded plastic pollution. Who are the bad actors? Who do you see are the ones that need to be brought into the tent to work, as you say, in harmony with other companies?
No, I think it's really easy for us to say there are good actors and there are bad actors. And
well, there's a big problem. So, I mean, clearly, if you're saying you're part of the solution, who's part of the problem then? Let's call them out.
I think part of the challenge is that we don't have the systems in place. Plastics have developed over the past 100 years, but there's been relatively little regulation to frame a circular economy. And many countries in the world don't have basic curbside or doorstop waste collection like consumers enjoy in Canada or in other developed economies. And the treaty is an opportunity really to build a framework and support governments around the world in order to be able to build collection systems, reuse systems, recycling systems. This is about a systems challenge, and there are many actors who haven't been able to do their piece of the puzzle. Many of the businesses in the coalition, we've been working on this challenge for years, and the study that you cite is using data from 2018 to 2022. If I give you the example of our company, we reduced our plastics footprint from 1.5 million tons a year in 2019 to 900,000 tons last year. We've taken significant efforts in redesigning our packaging, relooking at our portfolio of products, and it's about everyone doing their part.
Would it be realistic, though, for Nestlé to eliminate plastic?
I think if the regulatory framework in the world were different, many companies wouldn't use plastic packaging. The reality is that plastic is a material that has great value in protecting food. And we're a food company. If we look at the overall emissions challenges, for example, of producing food and delivering it to a consumer, only about 12% of the emissions associated today are associated with the packaging. If the packaging doesn't perform, we lose the food, and that has a much bigger environmental impact. So when we look to the future, we comply with regulations all around the world, and many governments are redesigning regulation around packaging. We see big changes, for example, in Europe, and we expect that this treaty is going to reshape the landscape for packaging and for packaging waste management. But, Mark, it's not only about that. It's about the other materials. It's about the fishing industry, agricultural uses of plastic, automotive, construction. Plastic packaging for food and beverage gets a lot of attention because everyone touches it almost every day of their life. But in fact, it's about 40% of global use today.
Okay, you're mentioning the recycling idea and, you know, how there are curbside programs. And of course, that's a benefit. But even the OECD has put out a report saying only 9% of plastics are recycled. So clearly, recycling is not the solution here. We need something that runs deeper. And I wonder, should it be voluntary or should it be mandatory?
Well, we're here pushing for mandatory global rules. Okay. I mean, we agree we can't recycle our way out of this challenge. And with projected increases in plastic production, we don't see the system scaling up commensurately with the scale up of plastics production. This is why we're part of a group that's committed to reducing our usage of new plastic by 30% by 2025. So we're part of a big group of companies that's working on this, but voluntary corporate efforts aren't enough. And that's why back in Nairobi at the United Nations Environment Assembly 5.2, 2 years ago, environment ministers voted to take legally binding action. This will be legally binding action on governments. And following the completion of the treaty negotiations, the final text of the treaty will then guide those governments in implementing new national legislation.
Jody, explain something to me. This process started 4 years ago, and this meeting in Ottawa is not the last meeting. There's still another meeting yet to come. Yeah. Why does this take so long if everybody seems to agree that plastic pollution is a problem? Why are we now moving into year five of discussing this while plastic production is increasing?
Well, it's a fair question, Mark. I mean, to put it into context, 2022 was when the UNEA 5.2 took place, where the mandate to launch the negotiations was started. And the United Nations Environment Program then set up the process called the INCs, the International Negotiation Committees, and they established five. But this is such an important issue, they actually are working at double speed. Normally, there's one negotiation a year. They've set out a schedule that's never been attempted before of two negotiations a year with a break of about 5.5 months between each negotiation. So I know it may, for those of us in the business community, seem slow. But from a comparative perspective with other UN negotiations, it's actually extremely fast.
Okay, before I let you go, we're going to hear after you, Jody, in a moment from a scientist who wants to see a cap on plastic production. So why isn't that part of the proposal your coalition is bringing to these negotiations?
We actually have proposed to reduce primary plastic production. It's one of our three main positions.
So you are in favor of putting that cap in then, that's going to be a mandatory position that you would promote?
We haven't used the word cap. We've called for a reduction in primary plastic production with a circular economy approach. This is critical because we think that recycling alone is not going to get us out of this. But there are a lot of options. There are reduction in plastics in alignment with 1.5 degree pathways. There are mechanisms for those reductions, like voluntary reduction targets, launching reuse systems, product design innovation, as well as challenging measures like caps. Some of those proposals, like a cap would implement, it would impact more countries than others. And I think that the challenge today is we have to move forward with a negotiation that can ultimately conclude at the end of the year. There's a lot of, let's say, lack of agreement around the topic of should caps be a tool. But I think there are many parties who are in agreement that we need to reduce the production of plastic gradually and ensure step-by-step phase out so that we can actually align with 1.5 degree pathways for climate.
Jody, thanks for your time and good luck with this work. It's critical.
Thanks very much for your interest. Bye, Mark.
Jody Roussel is the Global Public Affairs Lead for Packaging and Sustainability at Nestle and co-chair of the Business Coalition for a Global Plastics Treaty.
The music teacher says it was consensual sex. His former students say it was rape.
He had sex with me once in the classroom, in a closet.
Something happened to me, too.
I thought he was our little predator.
Why wasn't he stopped? These women seek answers and justice. I'm Julie Ireton, host of a new podcast, The Band Teacher. It's available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Just that somebody could be this diabolical.
Joining me now is one of those scientists calling for an urgent reduction in plastic production. Pete Myers is the founder and chief scientist at the not-for-profit Environmental Health Sciences and adjunct professor of chemistry at Carnegie Mellon University. He's in Ottawa as well, attending the UN Plastic Treaty negotiations. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. You were listening in to Jody Roussel. Give me your thoughts on what she had to say.
Well, I want to thank Jody for her very interesting comments. And there's a lot of agreement. We are looking for major reductions in plastic production. But you have to bear in mind about Jody, her training, her profession, and she's really good at it, is sowing doubt about the dangers of plastics so consumers think they are safe. That's what her company pays her for. Notice that she didn't once mention the big elephant in the room, which is the health effects of plastics. And that's my specialty. I have studied the toxicity of plastics, of chemicals in plastics, for over 30 years. And three decades ago, we didn't know very much. But now the evidence is overwhelming bad news.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about that, because there has been a push to reduce what's known as virgin plastic. That's the newly created first-time plastics that often made from fossil fuels. So where do you stand on that?
Well, virgin plastic is actually probably a better source of plastic than recycled plastic, because recycled plastic has amplified the toxicity of plastic as it's being recycled.
Well, if Jody was mentioning recycling and circular and the circular economy, as she calls it, as part of the solution, what's your view of that? Does recycling, I mean, it works, but how effective is it in reducing this global problem?
Recycling is a chimera. It is totally ineffective. It does not go to scale, neither mechanical recycling nor what's now called chemical recycling are appropriate tools to reduce the burden of plastic, and especially to do so in a way that deals with the toxicity of plastics.
But do you see that, Pete, as something that needs developing, or is it almost a distraction as we're searching for solutions?
It's a purposeful distraction. There's a wonderful report by a place called the Climate Integrity Project that traces the fraud of recycling back to its origins. Then that fraud of misrepresenting what it can accomplish and the false hopes that it creates among people and consumers that gives them the excuse to go on consuming goods. A friend of mine calls recycling the the fig leaf of consumerism, because we think we're doing good when we're really not having any effect, and the plastic just keeps spewing out in the environment, reaching untenable levels.
So tell me then about the role of the consumer in all of this. Do we have a role to be pushing for change when it comes to this? Because we are the ones who are buying these products. We are the ones who are buying the Pepsi and the Coke and the Nestle products out there.
The consumer, the public, the voter definitely has a role in pushing for change. It probably won't happen without them, particularly when you have people as effective as Jody is at taking the focus away from the elephant in the room, the toxicity of plastics.
Many scientists are calling for a cap on the production of plastic. Why would that be important?
Well, I think what's important is that we have a dramatic reduction in plastic. Already, the amount of plastic that's out there, as you mentioned in your introduction, is just astounding. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. And that means that the chemicals that are in the plastic are everywhere and affecting health everywhere. The plastics that are out there are falling literally upon us in rain and snow every day. And they are doing so in amounts that conservative regulatory authorities have already decided are dangerous to health. It's bad. We can't let it get worse. We have to have reductions. We have to prevent the diseases that plastic exposures causes, not merely treat them.
Okay, and I don't want to get caught up in semantics here, but when we're talking with Jody, I said, you know, do you support a cap? She says, yeah, well, we support a mandatory reduction, but not a cap. So navigate that one for me. Is there support out there for capping production, or is capping seen as being heavy-handed and a dirty word?
I think it depends upon who you're talking to.
Okay.
I support a strong reduction that we have to work towards. I mean, the problem is many plastics are dangerous to health.
Yep.
There's no question about that. And what we have to do is figure out how to replace them, because plastics play a useful role. They do. But we've got to find out what are the safe plastics to use, what are the non-safe plastics to use, and how do we get an overall reduction in the amount of plastic that's out there, and do it quickly, because industry right now is they're planning a threefold increase in the production of plastic over the next 3 decades. It's already bad. It's already bad enough. And we have to start getting control of that growth, because if it goes to threefold increases, it is a real threat to sustainability of humans.
Well, the CBC asked Canada's Environment Minister, Stephen Guilbeault, about the idea of a production cap. And Pete, take a listen to what he had to say.
Just coming out and saying, well, we want to put a cap on plastics. Which plastics? All plastics, including the ones we would use in the medical sector, in the EV sector, in the renewable energy sector? I don't think it makes sense right now. Let's figure out, there are plastics we want to eliminate. Let's agree on that together rapidly. There are certain chemicals, additives that we know are harmful to humans, harmful to nature. Let's eliminate those right away.
So what do you think of that? He seems to be agreeing with you, too, about digging into the toxicity of certain plastics, is making that a priority.
I agree. I think he was very well-spoken. We can't do it all at once. We've got to attack the worst now. And the other thing we have to do, it turns out replacing those bad chemicals that are in plastics and replacing the bad plastics is a tremendous opportunity for chemical innovation. It is going to be a source of income, a source of economic activity that will be very important as we move forward. But it can't happen overnight.
And I know you're actually the founder of a chemical company, so you are in the belief that there are good chemicals out there. But I'm just curious to know, what are the obstacles, or who are the obstacles? If we all agree this is a problem, why can't we agree on a solution?
Well, there's a phenomenon in this debate called manufacturing doubt, which is for lawyers and scientists to look for dimensions of the science that's really strong that make it easy to criticize. And the people who do manufacturing doubt are the people who are slowing this process down.
Are you hopeful?
Yeah. I'm not only hopeful, I'm optimistic. We have the ability to use the science we have today, which we didn't have when plastic was invented. We know why some plastics are safe and some aren't. And let's use that information, that chemical information, to design safer materials. I was actually talking in a public reception with chemical engineers a few years ago, and they came up to me and they said, thank you. We like what you are doing because you are making certain commodities plastics unsellable in the market. And I realized that was my calling. I have the knowledge to help chemists make safer materials, and that's what I want to do.
Pete, let's end on a note of optimism. I like that. And a pleasure to talk to you this morning. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Pete Myers is chief scientist at the Environmental Health Sciences. He's in Ottawa attending the UN Plastic Treaty Talks.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.